Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to part two of Shirin Degan's Invested Investor podcast. In part one, we found out how she built and sold Ariso. After a short break, Shirin transitioned into angel investing and more recently as a venture capitalist for Frog Capital. Visit our website, investedinvestor.com, to listen to a host of other podcasts and find details of how to buy our first book. So you took a break, did you, or not?
I did, yes, after I left.
Disappeared for a year?
I with my husband, we built a house in Oxfordshire from scratch. So that was an interesting experience. Managing builders, I'd rather do a startup, actually.
I've built several houses. That's where I made my money, actually, building houses. So I know exactly what it's like. Not for myself, though. This is perspective of building houses.
Sure. So, yeah, so that was an interesting experience. So that took like 18 months or so. And then I started sort of getting bored, and Corecon Venture, who invested in my company, contacted me early 2016 and said, hey, we've got a company in our portfolio, OpenSignal. We think they're promising. You know, they've got themselves to a couple of million, but can't quite break through that. Can you go and help? So I became executive chair at OpenSignal, did that for 12 months, and also brought in a lot of my team from Ariso. So brought in, I think, 10, 12 people from there. And so we got the company going from a couple of million. And this year, they're going to break the 10 million barrier.
Are you still a chair there? Or?
Yes, I'm not exec now. So I did the exec thing for 12 months. And I became a member of Cambridge Angels. Started doing angel investment. And then last year, when I stepped back to non-exec at OpenSignal, I was again starting to get bored. I actually was looking at doing my next startup, and it's crazy, I know. And then I got contacted by two funds quite separately and then started talking to them. Hadn't considered VC as a path. But actually, the more I investigated, the more I liked it. I talked to people.
Well, Richard had done exactly.
So
Jonathan Pell, if you know him as well, etc. Yeah.
In fact, it's his fault because he gave my name to the headhunter that was searching for frogs. So.
And they didn't try to get you into DFJ or anything. No,
well,
obviously not.
It wasn't DFJ. It was another fund, and it was Frog.
Okay.
And I liked Frog because I felt that their investment thesis was a lot, you know, closer to what I want to do. Their sort of company to partner ratio is really good.
Four companies per partner.
To per partner. And I think that's excellent because it means that you actually have time to understand the business and add real value rather than turn up to a lot of board meetings, which frankly isn't that much fun.
I'm on five boards and that's just about the limit of what I
want
to do.
Yeah. So that was quite good. And also they've got real passion to actually help the companies, and that's why they're bringing people like me, more with operational background.
So we'll talk about Frog a little bit more in a minute, but how much angel investing have you done?
So far, four.
Okay.
Four companies.
One of which is, I think, Rovco you've gone into, have you?
Yes.
Yes,
yes,
which I've
did.
Just gone into as well.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
only
yes.
been, that's not actually in the public domain yet, but it will be by the time this goes out. And what else have you invested in?
So I'm invested in Cinescope. That was a company founded by a couple of guys who worked for me.
And you're quite a big investor in that. I think you're 30%, yes. I noticed.
Yeah.
So you're a co-founder, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Then I've got investment into Neurophonics, which is a basically biomedical engineering company, hardware and software. And then OpenSignal, okay. I invest in.
Yeah, so two of those you're very close to.
Yes.
So in terms of angel investing, primarily the two, Neurophonics and of course, Rovco, which you've only just closed in the last week.
That is correct, yes. Yeah.
But of course, now you're concentrating very much more on Frog. So can we just talk very briefly about Frog? Is it public who the LPs are, where the capital's from?
Yeah, I think so, reasonably. I mean, basically, it's British Business Bank, it's European Investment Fund, and it's family fund that has been supporting Frog, because it used to be a family fund before, and the same family is supporting it now.
A UK family, is that?
No, actually, they live in Liechtenstein, and a number of other family sort of offices that support it. In terms of Frog's focus, they focus on scale-up, so they're not early-stage investors. They sort of come in when product-market fit has largely been achieved and really the money is for, you know, expansion, either geographical or
so revenues of
customers
low
and
millions,
kind of,
I suspect.
Yeah, so a few million revenue, and then they want to obviously take it to the next level.
And is this a B round or an A round or an A+,
late,
or a B
late minus? Series A,
yeah.
B round, that kind
yeah.
of... That kind of, all these letters are morphing into one another, aren't they?
So it's just kind
years,
of yeah. You get seed rounds of 1.5 million now.
Well, exactly, and the amounts are going up all the
yeah.
time. So the way I think about things is, and I'm not hung up on, you know, whether it's B, A, whatever. I'm focused on, have you got product market fit? Can you demonstrate you've sold it to customers? Is the business model scalable? Is your product scalable? If you've sort of got all of those ticks. And you want money to just, you know, basically dominate the market.
And have you led any rounds yet for them and gone onto board?
No, I've only been with them for 2 months.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so it's still early days. But I'm looking at a few things.
Yes.
Including some Cambridge companies.
So, Shirin, what have you learned from your investments so far?
The way I look at my personal investments, and it's the same with Frog, but let's focus on the angel side of it. I care a lot about the team. Because especially if it's really early stage, frankly, sometimes there isn't really much there that you can base decisions on. So I've got to really believe in the team and I've got to feel, you know, the chemistry and all that. So team is really critical. I've got to be comfortable with the product, comfortable in the sense that it's not a me too. It has, you know, there's know-how there. People, you know, been working on a particular problem or something and they've got a solution, something that's tangible and defendable. So I wouldn't invest in apps and stuff like that, for example, that's easily copied. And the third area is market. Do I believe there is a big market? So those are the criteria I look at when I make my investments. So which ones are successful? So I would say Neurophonics, I'm really happy with those guys. They're, you know, super motivated entrepreneurs. They're hitting every month and they're still pre-revenue, but they're doing extremely well. And I feel my money is in good hands. So this is kind of, as an angel investor, you have to feel that the entrepreneur is going to look after the, you know, the money that you've just, you know.
With some help from the investor director,
of course.
If there is one, of course.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I've been helping Neurophonics quite a lot as sort of pseudo chairwoman until they hire their chairperson, because I don't really understand their particular market. So they need to bring someone who does. But until that point, I've been helping them. In fact, I'm running a strategy day for them on Saturday, things like that. Cinescope, which is the guys who used to work for me, that is not going massively well. They did really well. Like they're in revenue. They're doing like a couple of hundred K. But the trouble was that I invested in the guy who came with me to US because he's brilliant. And I invested in my chief architect because I knew technically he was really good. But really the driving force was going to be him. And then I think they just got fed up with each other.
Oh, no, right.
Exactly. So what I should have maybe paid more attention was that, is that relationship going to work?
Are they still together?
I mean, they'd work together in my business.
And they're still working together in Cinescope, but not very well.
Well, the guy who I personally invested the money in effectively has now left and working for OpenSignal. So he told me that he couldn't get on with the technical guy and just wasn't working. And then at that time I was in OpenSignal and I was looking for head of product. I said, well, okay, we'll come to
OpenSignal. You poached your own poached CEO.
So I said, okay, if you're not going to make money for me here, at least
some money somewhere else.
Exactly. So that one kind of hasn't gone so well. And it was, you know, it was kind of my mistake because, you know, I let my guards down because I knew the team and I should have kind of been a bit more careful about, are they be able to work together in a different environment?
Well, you were family, friends and fools, weren't you? And in that case, friends and maybe a tiny bit of fool, perhaps, as you don't mind me saying.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that, and also I felt kind of obliged to help them, because effectively they had, you know, they had made me successful and it was going to be a bit awkward to say.
It was a Christmas gift.
It was a gift. It was kind of, when they said, oh, we want to start our own company, I supported them.
What tips have you got for entrepreneurs and angels?
I would say, as an entrepreneur, you're starting out to build your company, focus on solving a big problem. Don't do a me too. Don't go after something that everyone else can copy. So I think that's quite, I think, important. The other one is, as founders, decide if you're control-oriented or if you're wealth-oriented and kind of make that decision from, you can't be both. And also as an investor, I always try to test that out because the wealth-oriented founders are the ones that are going to do far, far better than the ones who are far more interested in keeping control. So I think that's the other thing that they need to kind of figure out, especially when you're getting a co-founder. Because if one co-founder is wealth-oriented, the other one is controlled, then there's going to be problems.
But can some 28 or 29-year-old founders work that out?
I don't know.
Have they enough emotional awareness to do that?
And
if they're mentored into doing that, will they believe that? So
yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know. But if I look at myself, I was always wealth-orientated. I just wanted to build the biggest value that I could with the company. Now, my company wasn't a $1 billion company, but if it was, I would have gone for that. But that's just the person I am. So I don't know whether you know that, as you say, when you're younger. Maybe you don't. Maybe you kind of find out later. But as investors, I think it's really critical for us to detect which one we're working with. And the other tip is get yourself a mentor. Really, really important, especially if you're a first-time founder, team up with someone who's done it before and you can learn from. You know, when I did my startup, I really didn't have anyone that I learned from, and I think I paid for it in the first product. And so I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
But you don't have to.
And this project's all about being open and transparent. Yeah. Do you feel that really worked for you, or were there times when that didn't? Being transparent between you and your investors and your board.
Yeah.
And the other way around, of course.
Yeah. I was always open with my board. I think the key thing with managing and the board is that you have to be honest. You know, you can't hide stuff. But at the same time, you can't turn up to board meetings with a laundry list of problems and not have a solution either. Because then, you know, your investors and your board members are going to think, well,
they lose faith.
Exactly. You're not in control.
Yeah.
So be open, but actually figure out how to solve the issues that are coming up in the business and keep the board informed of the most, you know, critical risks and problems, obviously. And finally, you know, I would say the biggest thing that worked for me, and again, I had to learn this the hard way, and I did it for the last 5 years of running the company, under promise, over deliver. And that keeps everyone happy.
Under promise, over deliver.
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the big takeaway, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good. And the final question, which you don't know what I'm going to ask, is I'm at least a decade older than you. I know how much older I am because I've seen your birth town company's house. What do you think you're going to be doing when you get into your early 60s?
Oh, God. That's an interesting question.
Not thought about, yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a self-proclaimed workaholic, so I'm definitely not going to retire, that's for sure. I just have too much fun working with companies and solving problems and that kind of thing. So I think I probably morph into, you know, much more of an active angel investor, I should say, than I am now, and probably develop a kind of a portfolio maybe when I'm at that age.
and not have, say, the VP role or whatever it is at Frog or a VC. You'll be fully portfolio, you think?
I think so. I mean, for me, the VC thing is for the next 10 years. Mm. And yeah, I'll just be hitting, just coming
up
to 60.
Yes, don't need to say.
No, that's fine. I'm 48, doesn't matter. So I'm looking at this as, you know, something that I'm going to do for a period of time. I don't want to do it for forever. But afterwards, I just want to go and, do my own thing.
You've had a great time, haven't you, so far in life, and I'm sure that will continue.
Yeah.
And we've learned a tremendous amount from you, Shirin, so thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Invested Investor podcast. You can subscribe to all future podcasts via our website, investedinvestor.com, or via a number of podcast platforms online. Signed pre-orders for our Invested Investor book are now available on our website. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook to get the most up-to-date, interesting, and insightful content from the Invested Investor.